Here's your pass to the Globe Theater. This is the Globe Theater, the radio playhouse especially for men and women of the armed forces of the United Nations. Just as the Globe Theater has meant the best in entertainment since the days of Shakespeare, today it means the best in radio drama. Here to tell you about tonight's play is your host at the Globe Theater, Herbert Marshall.
Hello, everybody. With peace again in Europe and the sum total of the devastation counted up, it's comforting to pause and reflect on the few moments of high courage and lyrical beauty that helped us through the grueling years. One of these has been recorded in Paul Gallico's timeless and hauntingly lovely story of the Snow Goose. We have a fine cast this evening, and I should like to single out one member of it for special notice. She's the lovely young actress who gives such a notable performance with Betty Davis in the picture The Corn is Green. I refer, of course, to Miss Joan Loring.
And so, with Herbert Marshall and Joan Loring as our stars, here is Paul Gallico's touching story of the Snow Goose.
They tell of the Snow Goose, all that know of her. But what they tell is only a little of the story. It is not a story that falls easily and smoothly into sequence. And some of it comes in the form of fragments from men who looked upon strange and violent scenes.
There you are, lads. Ale and bitters.
A goose, a blooming goose, so help me.
God, I don't believe it.
A goose it was, jockey a seed it same as me.
They were men of all kinds, and from every station.
You were at Dunkirk. Did you run across that queer sort of legend about a wild goose?
A wild goose? No, but I saw a tame one. Odd that you should mention a goose. I suppose some people might say it was a legend.
Legend? No, gentlemen, it wasn't a legend. Have you ever seen a snow goose? Have you ever looked up into the deepest blue of the heavens and seen suddenly a black speck coming toward you? A speck that in the space of seconds is transformed into a rush of white wings, black-tipped. A thrust forward head. A strong, graceful body like a great white sail in full flight. I have seen that, gentlemen. I have known a snow goose well. My name is Philip Ryder. By my own choice, I left the world of human society in the late spring of 1930. There were reasons for this choice of mine. Among them, the strange, misshapen body which God had given me. For I must have been a frightening apparition indeed. I bought an old abandoned lighthouse at the mouth of the Elder, and the acres of marshland and salting which surrounded it. I wanted only to be left to my painting and to have as little contact with the world as possible. I was drawn to my lighthouse not only because of its isolation, but because of the hundreds of species of birds which migrated there every spring. One November afternoon, 3 years after I had come to the Great Marsh, I stood in my enclosure feeding the birds. I looked along the seawall and saw a child, a little girl. She was no more than 12, slender, nervous, timid as a bird, beautiful as a marsh fairy. She was pure Saxon, fair, deep-set, violet-colored eyes, and desperately afraid. What is it, child?
I thought I was...
Come, child, don't be frightened. I won't hurt you. Come closer. What have you there?
I found it, sir. It's a bird. It's hurting. Is it still alive?
Yes. Yes, I think so. Come in, child, come in. Let's see what's the matter with it. Just hold it here for me on this table. Please don't be frightened.
I found it in the marsh, sir, where hunters have been. Whatever kind of bird is it, sir?
It's a snow goose from Canada. But how in heaven came it here?
You can heal it, sir, can't you?
Yes, I hope so. Anyway, we'll try. Oh, don't be afraid.
I'm not afraid. But I've never seen a bird like her before.
No, nor have I in any parts of the country close to here. She came to us from a very great distance.
Where from?
She was born in a northern land far across the seas. Every winter she flew to the south to escape the snow and ice and bitter cold. This year, a great storm must have seized her and whirled and buffeted her about. When finally it had blown itself out, she dropped to rest in a friendly green marsh, only to be met by the blast from the hunter's gun.
Oh.
Yes, a bitter reception for a visiting princess. But it's not as bad as it might have been. In a few days, she'll be feeling much better. You and I will call her the princess. The lost princess. Do you like that?
Oh, yes.
Now watch. See if she won't eat something. Here is some grain. Put it in the palm of your hand and hold it out to her.
Look, she's eating it. Her eyes are open. Oh, hi. Goodbye.
No, wait, wait.
Yes, sir?
What is your name, child?
Frith.
Where do you live, Frith?
With the fisher folk at Wickledon.
Will you come back tomorrow or the next day to see how the princess is getting along?
Yes, sir. Yes, I will. Goodbye, sir.
In spite of her instinctive fear of that strange, misshapen figure which is myself, Frith came back often to see the princess, and as her devotion to the bird grew, her fear of me disappeared completely. One June morning, a group of late geese answered the siren song of the breeding grounds and rose lazily into the sky in ever-widening circles. With them, her white body and black-tipped pinions shining in the spring sun, was the snow goose.
Look, the princess. Is she going away?
Yes, the princess is going home. Look, Frith, she's bidding us farewell.
Well, I think I'd best be going home, too. Goodbye, sir.
No need for you to hurry, child. Sit and talk a bit.
No, sir. Thank you very much. But I think I'd best be going home.
Goodbye, Frith. I learned all over again the meaning of the word loneliness. That summer, from memory, I painted a picture of a slender child, her fair hair blown by a November storm, who bore in her arms a wounded white bird. That winter started the parade of years, the happiest I've ever known. Time was marked by the height of the tides, the passage of the birds, and for Frith and me by the arrival and departure each year of the snow goose. Finally, one spring, when Frith returned, I realized with a shock that she was a child no longer. She had grown tall, slender, and hauntingly beautiful. As I looked at her, I felt the deep surge of my longing, my loneliness, and all the unspoken things that lay between us. We stood together in that spring of 1940, watching our birds migrating, even that early, from the great marsh. The world was on fire that spring. The whine and roar of the bombers and the thudding explosions had frightened the birds. The first day of May, we watched the last of them rise from their sanctuary.
Look, Philip. The princess. She's going with them.
The call is strong, Frith. Almost impossible to resist. But somehow she doesn't seem as sure as usual. See how she is circling close to us.
I wish she'd stay. You wouldn't be so alone if she were always here.
The call is strong, Frith. For both you and the princess. When she flies away, I lose both of you.
I mustn't stay. I have to go.
Look up, Frith.
The princess. Oh, Philip, she's not going. She's circling nearer and nearer. She's coming back. The princess is going to come back.
Yes, she is coming back. And this time to stay. Always. The lost princess is lost no more. This is her home now. Of her own free will.
Of her own free will. Of her own free will.
Yes, my dearest. Of her own free will. Don't go, Frith. We need you. The princess and I.
After a brief musical interlude, Herbert Marshall and Joan Loring will return in the second half of The Snow Goose. Now, with our stars Herbert Marshall and Joan Loring, here is the second act of The Snow Goose.
In the years that followed, I learned about Philip Ryder. I will never forget the first day I walked along the sea wall with the bleeding snow goose in my arms and stopped frightened at the sight of the dark figure that appeared at the door. I saw a man, a hunchback, with his left arm crippled. At first I had been afraid of him, but when he spoke, his voice was deep and gentle, and my fears vanished when I found that he loved very greatly man and all nature. It was some years later when Philip and I sailed back to the lighthouse after getting supplies in town. It was amazing to watch him handle his fast 16-foot sailing boat with his strong right hand on the tiller and in a brisk wind the rope clenched between his teeth. As we disembarked, I noticed that Philip was strangely quiet. What is it, Philip?
It's nothing, child.
It's the war, isn't it? It's that you feel you cannot do anything, that you cannot serve with your fellow men fighting for a land that you love deeply, isn't that it?
There are some things Providence never intended me to do.
That Providence which has handicapped you will show you what to do. If it doesn't, there is no God.
Never say that, Frith. If there were no God, there would not be anywhere the beauty that is all around us now.
I was very young. But an age-old instinct told me that here was a man whose heart was breaking because he could not serve in an angry world. I left him sadly. And it was more than 3 weeks before I returned to give him the news that was on every tongue. Of a British army trapped on the sands of Dunkirk, 100 miles across the sea. A British army huddled helplessly and waiting certain destruction. I could see the light of Philip's lantern down by his little dock. And as I approached, I saw that he was loading supplies into his sailboat. Water and food, bottles of brandy and a spare sail. He was pale, but his dark eyes were glowing with excitement. I knew at once that he had heard the call for help, and that here at last was something he could do.
Hello, Frith.
Philip, are you going away?
Frith, I am glad you came. Yes, I must go away. I must go away now. It's only a little trip. I'll come back.
Where must you go?
Dunkirk.
Dunkirk? In such a small boat?
Yes, I know. But our government has called every man who owns any kind of craft that floats to head across this sea and haul the men off the beaches.
But, Philip, you can't carry more than 6 men, and for 100 miles each way, it's impossible.
They don't need to be taken far. Only to the transports and destroyers that can't reach the shallows. I can make many trips of that distance with 6 or 7 men at a time.
Philip, I know how much you want to go, but I'm so afraid. In that little boat, you'll never come back. Philip, you'll never come back. Please don't go.
Frith, listen to me. Men are huddled on the beaches like hunted birds. Over them fly the steel peregrines, hawks and falcons, made of steel, Frith, and each one brimful of destruction. Our men have no shelter from these iron birds of prey. They are lost and storm-driven and harried, like the lost princess you found and brought out of the marshes many years ago. They need help, my dear. Just as our wild creatures have needed help. Don't you see, Frith, as you've said, Providence has shown me the way to serve.
I stared at Philip. I could not believe the change in him. For the first time, he was no longer ugly or misshapen, but very beautiful. I will come with you, Philip.
No, Frith. Your place in the boat would cause a soldier to be left behind and another. No, I must go alone. Will you look after the birds until I return?
Godspeed you.
I will take care of the birds.
Godspeed, Philip.
Goodbye, Frith. God bless you. Goodbye.
I stood on the sea wall and watched the sail gliding down the swollen estuary. Suddenly, from the darkness behind me, there came a rush of wings, and something swept past me in the air. In the night light, I saw the thrust forward head of the snow goose, flashing down the winding creek where Philip's sail was slanting in the gaining breeze, to fly above him in slow, wide circles. Watch over him. Watch over him.
I tell you, it was a goose. Jockey has seen it same as me.
God, I don't believe it.
God's truth. I'd never be sitting here drinking this ale if it wasn't for that bird and him that was with it.
Him?
Who? Tell him what happened, Al.
Well, it come flying down out of the muck and stink and smoke of Dunkirk that was overhead. It was white with black on its wings, and it circles us like a blooming dive bomber. And while we're looking up at it, round the bend comes as pretty a little sailboat as you ever saw. There he sits in the stern sheets, this hunchback, holding the rope in his teeth with his good hand on the tiller and the crooked one waving to us to come.
I can take seven at a time. Come along, you men.
Listen at him there, a blooming angel of mercy.
I'll tell you, Cheddar. Get on your feet and let's go.
Yes, come on, Eddie.
Huh? All right, lads. One at a time. Over the side. That's six. What's the matter, lad? Can't you make it?
No. Too tired. I can't get up. Never mind, chum. Go ahead.
I said seven and it'll be seven. Here. Let me get a hold of that tunic.
In you come, lad.
That's better.
Hey, that's a strong arm, mate. Thanks.
That goose looks like the angel of death herself. What's she doing here?
Oh, that's the princess. She lives with me.
She sticks to you like you'd known her a lifetime.
I very nearly have. She was lost once. She knows how it feels.
Well, he brought us out all right. And then we watched him make trips all afternoon and all night, too. He was still going when we left. And the bird was with him as he waved us goodbye. A good man he was, that chap.
That's a good yarn, mate. I can tell you the end of it.
Yes? What happened?
Well, I was in that show. Our tugboat was on its third trip back, loaded down with soldiers, when our skipper sees a boat adrift off the starboard bow. We goes off course to have a look, and we finds this here goose sitting on the gunwale, guarding a man's dead body in the bottom of the boat.
Struth.
A hunchback he was. Just then, there's a shout from the bridge, and not 30 feet off the port beam is floating the biggest, juiciest mine you ever looked at. If we'd kept on our course, we'd have piled right into it. Well, we blew up the mine with rifle fire, and when we looked back, the little boat was gone. The explosion knocked her off and the chap with her. But that bird, well, it got up, circled three times like a plane, saluting, and took off. Queer it was. Give us all a turn. Lucky thing for us, we went over to have a look, eh?
Yes, lads. It was lucky you saw her. But that wasn't just a goose. That was a snow goose. Flying straight to the lighthouse. To Fritz, standing on the seawall, waiting. Waiting. Waiting.
Yes, waiting. But I knew that he was never coming back. I had stayed and roamed alone on the great marsh. I'd found the picture that Philip had painted of me when I was still a child, with an injured bird in my arms. Through the canvas, I could see his love shining like a pure white light. And so that sunset, when I heard the high-pitched, well-remembered note in the heavens, my eyes lifted to the sky, from whose flaming arches plummeted the lost princess, and the sight broke the dam within me and released the surging, overwhelming truth of my love. Wild spirit called, wild spirit, and I seemed to be flying with that great bird, soaring with it in the evening sky, and hearkening to Philip's message.
Fritz, my love,
I love you, I love you. Godspeed. Goodbye, Philip. Godspeed.
Remember, Fred, as the Snow Goose needed help, so all the world needs help. It was you who gave me faith, until Providence showed me the way to serve. Keep faith forever. Goodbye, my friend. Goodbye.
Thank you. And I'm happy to share that applause with my co-star in tonight's play, the very lovely and very young actress whose name is Joan Loring. And also with my good friends and countrymen, Eric Snowden, Frederick Warlock, Dennis Green, Ramsay Hill, and Gloria Gordon for their magnificent help. Incidentally, you may be interested to know that tonight's cast recently recorded this splendid story by Paul Gallico. This production of The Snow Goose was another selected from the series, This Is My Best. Right now, I should like to acknowledge a pleasant note we recently received from Richard Anderson, sonar man third class, who had some mighty nice things to say about our Globe Theater productions. And, too, he sent along a list of plays he and the rest of the fellows at Navy 3149 would like to hear. Some of them we have done already. Probably has heard them by now. The others we'll be on the lookout for and we'll try to add to our Globe bill of fare just as soon as possible. Now about next time. In response to many requests, we're going to bring you some Western stories. And the first of these will be a radio adaptation of Bret Hart's famous story, Meagles. Our storyteller will be a star whose exploits in hundreds of pictures have made him a symbol of the West. Mr. Harry Carey. Well, I guess that's all for this time, fellas. So this is Herbert Marshall saying good luck, and I'll be seeing you.
Been attending the Globe Theater with Herbert Marshall as host and master of ceremonies. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.